Washington, D.C. faces an unprecedented threat as a pair of killers calling themselves Jack and Jill embark on a deadly game targeting the city's most powerful figures. Their first victim is Senator Daniel Fitzpatrick, assassinated in his Georgetown home by a duo who operate with military precision. The male killer, using the alias Jack, films the execution while his female accomplice, Jill, assists. They leave behind cryptic notes suggesting their murders are political commentary on America at the end of its century. Meanwhile, in Southeast Washington, a very different predator lures 7-year-old Chanel Green with colorful balloons in Garfield Park. The stark contrast between these crimes immediately establishes the novel's central tension. While a senator's murder dominates headlines, a child's disappearance barely registers in the news, a damning reflection of the city's social and racial divides. Detective Alex Cross is awakened at 3:30 a.m. by his partner John Sampson with news of Chanel Green's murder just 4 blocks from his own home. After checking on his sleeping children, Damon and Janny, Cross heads to the crime scene, the proximity underscoring how he, unlike Washington's elite, lives in the very community being terrorized. Cross and Sampson spend the morning canvassing the neighborhood, hearing whispers about a child predator nicknamed Chop It Off Chucky. Despite his dedication to these cases, Cross is summoned to investigate the Jack and Jill murders. Despite his protests about abandoning the Southeast cases, Cross is forced to accept, with a pointed question from the commissioner, "Do you still want to be a cop?" This moment crystallizes how law enforcement priorities are determined by victims' social status rather than the severity of crimes. The Jack and Jill investigation intensifies after their second victim, television newswoman Madalie Sheehan, is found in another meticulously staged scene. Cross's analysis suggests perpetrators with narcissistic tendencies and possibly military backgrounds. The case becomes alarming when Secret Service agents temporarily lose track of President Thomas Burns during an unauthorized excursion. Their panic stems from a disturbing coincidence. Their internal code names, Jack for the President and Jill for the First Lady, match the killer's monikers. During an emergency White House meeting, officials discover the killers have been taunting the Secret Service with messages about practicing for the big one. The threat becomes internal when Jill, identified as Sarah Rosen, is revealed to have infiltrated the White House staff, gaining access to classified information and security protocols. Another lethal player emerges, Kevin Hawkins, a prize-winning photojournalist whose extraordinary visual memory makes him an exceptionally dangerous assassin. After executing a meticulously planned bombing in San Francisco, Hawkins heads to Washington for the Jack and Jill mission. Cross meets directly with President Burns, a charismatic former Ford executive who won the presidency as an independent. Cross shares his assessment that the killers are likely attractive, highly intelligent professionals methodically building towards something spectacular. Jack demonstrates increasing audacity by committing his 4th murder alone, eliminating General Aidan Cornwall and, horrifyingly, the general's 9-year-old son who witnesses the assassination. This cold-blooded decision to kill a child reveals a chilling evolution in Jack's psychology and signals the killer's determination to eliminate any obstacles. The investigation takes a dark turn when Cross and Sampson discover the identity of Jack, Sam Harrison, a man living a double life with a wife and daughter in Maryland while plotting to assassinate a president he considers a traitor. Despite the escalating threats, President Burns makes the controversial decision to maintain his schedule, refusing to let psychopaths completely alter our government. 9 days before Christmas, Cross travels with the presidential entourage to New York City. Despite security concerns, Burns insists on taking a motorcade from LaGuardia into Manhattan rather than a helicopter, refusing to hide from Jack and Jill. While Washington focuses on Jack and Jill, Cross and Sampson make progress on the Sojourner Truth School murders. Messages from someone claiming responsibility lead them to Colonel Frank Moore's townhouse. They burst in with weapons drawn, only to discover the real suspect is the colonel's 13-year-old son, Sumner, an honor student. In his room, they find Chanel Green's bloodied blouse and a note reading, "Nobody is gone." The revelation that a child killed other children adds a disturbing dimension to the novel's exploration of violence. Sumner is shown wandering M Street, disappointed that newspapers cover Jack and Jill but not his crimes, revealing his craving for recognition. The case takes an even darker turn when Samson discovers another murdered body in Garfield Park, Sumner Moore himself. The boy's body shows defensive wounds, his face unrecognizable. This unexpected development forces Cross to reconsider everything about the case. The NYPD deploys 5,000 officers for protection, yet Alex remains convinced Kevin Hawkins poses a grave threat. Disguised as a photojournalist, Hawkins watches the presidential motorcade at the Waldorf Astoria, unaware Jack is observing him. Security is breached when Jack and Jill send threatening flowers with another rhyme. Jack and Jill went up the hill and surprised the chief with flowers. We're here in town, we're counting down your last remaining hours. This confirms Alex's fears. Despite massive security, the killers have penetrated the president's inner circle. Cross struggles with the psychological toll his work takes on his family. After receiving hang-up calls at home, he arranges comprehensive surveillance and police protection. Exhausted but vigilant, he spends a night on the porch with his service weapon, seeing threats in every shadow. He keeps his son Damon home from school with Nana and Detective Powell guarding them. Though considering moving to a safer neighborhood, Alex knows his grandmother would never leave their Fifth Street home, a place representing decades of family history. As the novel concludes, President Burns makes his New York appearance despite threats. Cross analyzes the president's itinerary, believing Jack and Jill will attempt a close-range attack despite massive security at Madison Square Garden. Eventually, Cross is suspended after striking his superior during an argument about the investigation. Amid this darkness, Cross finds solace in his growing relationship with Christine Johnson, Sojourner Truth School's principal. Their conversations about school challenges and Alex's piano playing provide essential balance to his grim work. One night, Christine visits while he plays piano, brightening his life momentarily. But on Christmas Eve, as his family decorates their tree, Cross receives a disturbing call from Gary Sunigi, a murderer from his past, who reveals he left Rosie the cat and had been inside their home. Sunigi threatens he'll be seeing you soon before hanging up. The story underscores that evil never truly rests. It adapts and evolves. For Cross, solved cases bring not closure, but awareness that other predators wait in the shadows. Justice isn't a finite game with clear winners, but an endless vigil demanding constant vigilance and sacrifice. In our increasingly insecure world, what price are we willing to pay for safety?